did they work? Oh, there you go.
Good afternoon. I call to order the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. It is Tuesday, February 23rd. Good afternoon. Colleagues, we're going to open quickly with an informational hearing on House Bill 4138. So I will open that informational hearing. If you recall, colleagues, a couple of weeks ago we had a bunch of hearings, and at the same time we had a room full of people who wanted to testify on one of the bills. So I kind of asked you to not ask questions. We kind of limited, you know, what we did up here. And one of those bills was Representative Whitsitt's bill, House Bill 4138. And so I wanted to give her someone on her behalf an opportunity to come back and testify, since we didn't have a chance to let Dexter testify on that day, since we were pressed for time. So with that, Dexter, would you come up? And if you'll recall, colleagues, this was a bill about which the Oregon District Attorneys Association and the Oregon Department of Justice had some concerns about how they read the bill in terms of a legal interpretation. And then Dexter, who I believe drafted the bill, wanted an opportunity to talk about his perspective of the legal interpretation. So, Dexter, go ahead.
Chair Fagan, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. And I know you have a full agenda, so I will move as quickly as I can, but I just wanted to make a couple of preliminary observations. And the first of which, Madam Chair, is to follow on your observation. This bill has been a bit controversial, but I just want to kind of go over what the role of what my role is and the rest of your legislative council staff, and that is to assist you to make informed decisions about the issues that you have before you, and not to we don't take positions either for or against particular measures and the wisdom of them. The other high-level observation I wanted to make does concern the substance of the bill and kind of where it came from. And this bill is modeled after the federal independent counsel law, which, as you may recall, was enacted by Congress in the post-Watergate era. That was used 13 times at the federal level, probably most famously with the Whitewater investigation, about 12 other times as well. It was during the course, it has been allowed to sunset since then, but during the course of its existence, it was challenged. And the case went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, where it was challenged in part on separation of powers reasons, and the U.S. Supreme Court upheld that law as not violating the separation of powers doctrine as set forth in the U.S. Constitution. Oregon, as you all know, has separation of powers principles embodied in its constitution as well. And the Oregon Constitution actually has an express provision establishing that, whereas at the federal level it is an implied doctrine based on that kind of the structure of the U.S. Constitution. So these principles are a little different, but nevertheless they are similar as well, particularly in terms of two key concepts for separation of powers. The first of those is that one branch may not unduly burden another branch in the other branch's performance of responsibilities. And the second key concept is that one branch may not perform the functions that under the Constitution have been assigned to the other branch. So with that, what I'd like to do then is turn to walk you through the bill itself, kind of and ask you to look at that from the perspective of those standards of separation of powers, because if there is a challenge to be made here, it is on that basis. So bill is a one-section bill. I'll walk through each subsection, beginning with subsection 1. And that bill, that section authorizes the legislature to, by joint resolution, direct the Attorney General to conduct a preliminary investigation. And a joint resolution, as you all know, is it's a legislative measure you consider that expresses the will of the legislature, but is not itself law. However, if this bill were to become law, it would have the effect of mandating the Attorney General to act on whatever is the subject of the joint resolution. So right now, joint resolution is a means by which you can direct an agency to do something. It does not have the force of law. This would, in effect, cause a joint resolution directing the AG to conduct a preliminary investigation to do so. And it establishes a 90-day deadline in which to conduct that investigation. The 90-day deadline is a pure policy choice on your part. That was the timing, at the federal level. But again, what the Attorney General is directed to do is to merely conduct a preliminary investigation, not to complete an investigation. Subsection 2. Sets the standard by which the Attorney General is to conduct that investigation, and it's essentially the same as the AG employs in the conduct of any other criminal investigations, but again, it is to determine just whether there is reasonable grounds to warrant further investigation, not to complete the investigation. Subsections 3, 4, and 5 are essentially the linchpin of this bill, and they direct the Attorney General to report to the Legislative Assembly one of two things: either that they're in fact the outcome of the preliminary investigation, and that in fact there is no reasonable basis to continue with an investigation, or two, that there is a reasonable basis to continue the investigation, and therefore the Attorney General will seek the appointment of an independent counsel. And then there is a third option, and this kind of got lost in testimony last week or the week before, and that option is that the Attorney General can elect not to report to you. If the Attorney General makes that election, then the Attorney General is compelled to apply to circuit court for the appointment of independent counsel. So, if the Attorney General is concerned that a report to the Legislative Assembly is going to reveal prematurely too much information about the content of the investigation, the Attorney General can simply elect not to report, and then automatically the independent counsel provision is triggered. That is subsection 5. Subsection 6 is the direction to the circuit court to appoint an independent counsel and to give parameters about the scope of that investigation. And this is, again, modeled after the federal law. If there is a challenge based on separation of powers principles, I think it would probably be here. But again, the traditional role of the judicial branch, both at the federal level and at the state level, is to ensure that laws and the applicable constitutional provisions are being followed. And this is a means to do that when the conventional means are not available. And again, at the federal level, this has been upheld. I will say that the federal law expressly recuses the panel of judges that appoints the independent counsel from any further proceedings in that matter, and that provision is something that is lacking in this bill. But if the bill were to go forward, you might consider an amendment to provide for that. Subsections 7 and 8 are technical matters. Subsection 9 grants the independent counsel all of the authority of a district attorney. So therefore, just like any other district attorney, all of the means to conduct a criminal investigation and withhold information until the appropriate time is available to the independent counsel. Subsection 10 does expand the authority of the independent counsel to investigate not just criminal matters, but also violations of ethics law, and then subsection 11 directs the independent, or authorizes the independent counsel to withhold information and maintain confidentiality over the information until the appropriate time in the investigation. And that is the contents of the bill. Mm-hmm. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dexter. Any questions for Dexter? Yes.
Just one quick one. Thanks for your presentation, too. Thanks for that. Mr. Johnson, what happens if the Attorney General herself or himself is the subject of the investigation? How does it play out in here?
Chair Fagan, Representative Nierman, is a good question. The Attorney General is the one directed in this law to conduct the preliminary investigation, and so it does not contemplate that situation. However, I mean, the existing law does would allow for other. This is off the top of my head. I better just leave it at that. That this bill doesn't contemplate that.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I definitely am. As an attorney myself, I certainly know that, I'm a litigator, so lots of times different lawyers look at the same statute and come up with different conclusions. So I appreciate you being willing to come back and offer a legislative counsel's view of this draft. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. With that, I'm going to close the informational hearing on House Bill 4138 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1529A. Is Senator Hansel, is he here yet?
Nope.
All right. Well, I don't see him, so I'm going to...
Don't close it.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1527. Is Senator Monroe here? All right, he's not. There we go.
Time's the charm.
Is Samantha, all right, Samantha, third time's the charm. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1591A.
We'll have Sean Miller coming up in a second as well.
We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Read it.
Huh? Yes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1591A specifies that Director of Department of Consumer Business Services may provide information to any requester about complaints received against an insurer for unlawful practices under ORS 746.230 after removing personal identifier information. Sunsets provision January 1, 2021, takes effect July 1, 2016.
Chair Fagan and members of the committee, my name is Samantha Gladue. I'm here on behalf of State Senator Chip Shields, whom I work for, who represents North and Northeast Portland in the legislature. Thank you for considering Senate Bill 1591, which specifies that the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services can provide information about complaints of unlawful practices that the director receives about insurers. Some of you may know that the first bill, which Senator Shields passed in 2005, was an insurance reform bill. He has worked on improving insurance for consumers throughout his entire legislative career. Insurance is the only line of business that is exempt from Oregon's anti-fraud statute. Banking used to be exempt, but the legislature removed the exemption in the 2010 special session. In 2013, the legislature gave a right of private action and other tort-like remedies for mostly larger businesses in environmental insurance policies. That same year, Senator Shields tried to bring insurance under the Unfair Trade Practices Act, and that bill passed in the House, but it died in the Senate. Today, small businesses are still left out. As one business lawyer noted, the system is working in the context of environmental claims. But from a public policy perspective, it seems odd at best to treat policyholders and insurers differently depending on the nature of the underlying claim. Small business owners should be confident that the insurance coverage that they're paying for will cover them when they need it to, the same as big business. To that end, Senator Shields convened a bipartisan work group of senators to discuss Oregon's most pressing insurance fixes. Unfortunately, we couldn't come to common ground about the bigger issues like the duty to defend. However, we decided to add some transparency to the insurance complaint process. The legislative intent between Senate Bill 1591 is to make insurance complaints public record, except for redacting out information that could identify the complainant or other people or businesses referenced in the complaint. Legislative intent is to make known the name of the insurance company against whom the complaint was lodged. The intent is to provide some sunshine onto the complaint process, the complaint, and the work that the insurance division has undertook to resolve the complaint. Complete transparency with personal information redacted for privacy. Senate Bill 1591 passed out of the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation with bipartisan support, 5-0, and it passed the Senate floor with a 26-1 vote. I urge you to pass Senate Bill 1591 with a due pass recommendation to the floor. Thanks for hearing the bill.
Thanks, Samantha.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Property Casualty Insurers Association. And, you know, although we had disagreement with the original bill on Senate Bill 1591, we have agreed to the amended version that is before you today on the complaint process. And so, you know, again, I think you heard a good summary of what the bill does. It does shed some light on transparency on the complaint process, which, you know, I think, you know, from the insurer's standpoint, the insurance division, there's nothing to hide there. And I think we've always thought that process has been a good process. We may have had disagreements with Senator Shields in the past and on some of the other issues, but they're no longer in this version of the bill. And so we're here to, again, we worked with Senator Shields on the Senate side and came to this agreement, and we'll support the bill today. And happy to answer any questions. I think I did just hear that there is an amendment or an amendment to this bill dealing with transportation network companies, which I know I worked a lot with Representative McClain last session on. And so we have not been able to review that because we just received the amendment. So we urge you to move the bill as is, but we do encourage and would like to be involved in a discussion next session on that particular issue. And so I know there's Mr. Campbell here to talk about that issue, and you know, we want to address that issue in the 2017 session. And so with that, I'll conclude my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Hoyle.
I will just make a comment. So I did submit the amendments, and I understand that we won't be taking those up today. This is a bill that people have worked together, and I'm really happy that we've got a consensus product. I do feel that we need to do more around transportation networks and having and ensuring that motorists are protected and are insured, and that there are equal standards, whether it's a taxi company or it's a transportation network company. Consumers deserve to be protected, and we should have everybody playing by the same rules. So I look forward to working on that with whoever's in the legislature in 2017. But again, we put those forward so that we could start having that conversation again and understand that this is a consensus bill, so this won't be pushed forward.
Got it. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Fly. I appreciate that, and you know, we're obviously happy and agree with you on passing something on TNC's next session as well.
Representative Rayfield.
And Mr. Miller, I just wanted to understand this a little better, because when I read the bill, it's kind of vague, and I like, from a layperson standpoint, when I look at it, it doesn't seem to do much, right? And so, because there's a lot of confidential information, right? And then when you get, and so what I was trying to figure out is some of it's confidential, some of it remains confidential despite subsection 3. And so it says a director may provide to any requester information about complaints. So first of all, I was curious why we went with may and what rationale would they have to deny it. And then also information about complaints. What does that include? Does that include the actual complaint itself? The way I read it, it doesn't include any of the information gathered. Is it just a summary, or you know, what does that information about complaints, you know, what was the part of that discussion you guys had?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Rayfield, I think, and it's a good question for the insurance division because they'll know exactly. But the intent was to actually get the complaint. And so if a requester does ask for the complaint, our understanding of the bill is they're going to receive that complaint. And so it's not a compilation, because we talked about this with Senator Shields. Insurance division does a good job of, putting all those in categories now. And, they'll issue reports on complaints for insurance companies. Under this, you would be able to receive the actual complaint. Now, I will tell you, there's a lot of, this file, it could be a large file. I mean, I think that was some of the concern initially. But again, that's something that they will get. And just in discussions with DCBS, if there's any information, the confidentiality of the person that filed the complaint or anything that can be linked back to that person, there's also could be sensitive health information issues in there that it was very important for them. And they do this on the financial side as well now, is my understanding when it was described to me. But they will redact that information just to keep that that confidential, so it can't be linked back to that person that filed the complaint. And so any business or any kind of reference that would be. But you would see the complaint. You would, if you in your practice ask for a specific complaint, you'll receive that, is my understanding of the bill. Now, you can't use that against in a specific, lawsuit or, do something on your own regarding that, and that's in the current statute. But you are going to be able to see, I think, under the light of the complaints that consumers don't have access to now.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful hope.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then just the language of May. I'm just kind of curious why the May is in there. And then the other portion of the question is, subsection 2 says data gathered, pursuant to an investigation. Is that also information that one would get? Does that fall into the definition of information about complaints? I'm sorry, I read.
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, I read the May is that they have to provide the information. It's a good question for Legislative Council, but I think the May shall issue has been debated here. But I think in this case, it's something that again, if you're asking the division for that complaint, you're gonna receive it. So I don't see that as an option for the division. As for your second question, and that's a good question. I don't know quite how to answer that right now. So I think I'd like to maybe do a little bit of work and maybe get back to you on that information and ask the insurance division as well.
Representative McLean.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment to Representative Hoyle. I was not party to this amendment, and I had already talked to Mr. Miller and others saying that I was interested in 2017 to bring back some of the issues that we had not discussed or finished discussing in 2015. So I'd be happy to work with you on some of these issues. But I had been asked if I was bringing anything in the short session, and I said no, and this is not mine.
Okay.
So I take full credit for that.
Any other questions or comments for this panel? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I don't see anyone else signed up to testify on this bill. Is there anyone who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 1591A? Okay. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1591A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1591A.
Madam Chair.
Oh, boy. Bueller, you want to be on today?
I move Senate Bill 1591A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield has moved Senate Bill 1591A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, clerk, will you please call the roll?
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative Hoyle?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Newman?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bueller?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Fagan?
Yes. And with that, the motion passes. And let's see who. Since Representative Hoyle put some amendments on the bill, I think we should all have her carry it. What do you guys think?
Sure.
All right, sounds good.
Seems fair.
I see Senator Hansel with us now. We actually already have a public hearing open on Senate Bill 1529A, so Senator, if you'd like to come up. And I want to close the work session on Senate Bill 1591A.
You than me. Is this on the bad bill list?
Thank you, Chair Fagan, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Hansel, State Senator for District 29. It includes Wallowa, Union, Umatilla, Morrill, Gillam, Sherman, and half of Wasco counties. I'm here to support Senate Bill 1529A. I've been working closely with the League of Oregon Cities and the Special Districts Association of Oregon to get this bill put together. The bill is fairly straightforward. It states that for people living within a homeowners association, they do not need to water the lawns if and only if one of three triggers is met. These triggers are: the governor declares that a severe drought exists or is likely to exist. The Water Resources Commission states a severe or continuing drought exists or is likely to occur. Or three, a governing body of a political subdivision within the planned community requires conservation or curtailment of water use. We were approached by Gene Grant within the Home Builders Association to seek an amendment to add language to the bill stating that this is a temporary act only while any of the triggers are in effect. This was, in fact, the intent of the bill, and as such, I was more than willing to have the Dash 1 amendments drafted. I am supportive of Senate Bill 1529A as amended, and I would also like to add that it's been my pleasure to work with Representative McLean on this bill. Thank you very much, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions you might have.
All right. Do you want to go first, Representative McLean? Do you have any comments?
Well, I want to thank the senator. I think he's done a really good job, and I think that all of the people who needed to be at the table were at the table, both for the amendment and also for the development of the bill. I support it, and I hope that all of you will as well.
All right. Thank you. Other questions or comments? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Senator. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. We do have a few people. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Senator. And with that, I'll have a panel of Brian Posowich, Peggy Lynch, and Tom Wolf. I see you, Ian. Don't you dare eat my. All right, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please, and proceed in whatever order you prefer.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Fagan, members of the committee. My name is Brian Posowitz. I'm here today on behalf of Water Watch of Oregon. Water Watch is a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting and restoring stream flow in Oregon. Water Watch supports Senate Bill 1529. We think it will help continue a culture of conservation in Oregon, and that in turn will help to leave more water in our rivers and streams for fish, wildlife, and recreation. To be honest, we would have preferred a broader bill, one that applied to all types of homeowners associations, including condominiums, and one that applied at times other than just officially declared government droughts. That said, we think this is a step in the right direction, and our understanding is that it will help to set the stage for some discussions in the interim about some more comprehensive water conservation strategies. Thank you for considering my comments.
Chair Fagan, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I already sent in to you electronic comments, so I'll make this very brief. And this is the third time that I've been before this committee talking about this concept, so you pretty much know what I'm going to say. This is a good bill. It deals with a situation drought situations with the concept of being required to water your lawn. I've already shared our feelings about that. Climate change is the biggest issue facing fisheries in the world. This does a little bit to make that a less heinous process on our streams here in Oregon. We thank Representative McLean and Senator Hansel for all the work they've done on this issue and on this bill. And that's all. Thank you.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages the informed and active participation in government. The League spent 3 years studying water issues in the state a few years ago, we believe that this is a really important issue for this state. I know that everybody thinks that Oregon and rain and water go together, but I think we have all learned, particularly from last year, how that may not always be true. So good bill should pass. The reason I'm here today is to make sure that we do talk about the fact that this is just one small action of many that need to be taken. Our local small cities and community water districts need drought plans, and they are going to need help to be able to address those drought plans. We need groundwater studies so that we can get ahead of the potential issues that might occur. So I'm encouraging you, as you see other bills and or budget bills come up, and that you see those issues, that you can say, yes, I'm working on those, and they are good for Oregon. So thank you very much. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions or comments for this panel? Okay, seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
And our final panel is Tracy Rutten and Mark Landauer, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Fagan, members of the committee. For the record, Tracy Rutten with League of Oregon Cities, and I'll be very brief. I also want to thank Senator Hansel as well as Representative McClain for the work on this issue. We're very happy to support this bill. I think it's a great step to addressing some concerns that did come up during the 2015 summer, and we did have a number of our communities that had citizens contact them with concerns over requirements to irrigate their lawn. So I think this helps to clarify what everyone's role is during times of water shortage, and I thank you for your support. Happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon, Chair Fagan, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon, here to also thank Senators Hansel and Representative McClain. I think enough has been said. This is a good bill. We're supportive of it, and look forward to the continuing conversations. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions or comments for this panel? All right. Thank you very much. And that's the extent of the public testimony that signed up. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on Senate Bill 1529A? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1529A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1529A. Representative Bueller.
You're up. I'm up. I'm not sure I can do this.
I'd like you to do it very normally. Please.
Okay, I can do that.
Come on, and do it like
the precedence has been set. Chair Fagan, I move Senate Bill 1529A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Bueller moves House Bill 1529A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I would just want to give a shout out and a kudos to Representative McClain and Senator Hansel, who I know kind of had similar bills, but, you know, slightly different concepts on the House and Senate side, and it's always wonderful to see. I mean, bipartisanship is one thing, but bicameralship is truly the difficult thing to do, and so I just want to commend both of them for having come together in a bicameral and bipartisan manner to give us the bill that we're about to vote on right now. So any further comments or discussion? Okay, seeing none, Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Hoyle?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative
yes.
Vice Chair Bueller?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Higgins?
Yes. All right, with that, the motion passes. And Representative McClain, would you like to carry this on the floor? Great. And I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1529A. And looks all the left.
Is that it?
We're already in a public hearing for Senate Bill 1527, but I understand that Senator Monroe is not going to come. So, Aaron, did you want to come up? And then I guess Senator Monroe's staff as well. So, Aaron Dees, Doug Barber, and then I was told that Senator Monroe's staff would want to testify as well, but he does not appear to be here. Okay, great.
Good afternoon.
Chair Fagan, members of the committee, I'm Aaron Dees with TriMet. I'm coming to testify in support of 1527. This bill hopefully looks vaguely familiar, as it's the same exact bill that this committee passed out last session unanimously, with Representative Stark carrying it on the floor unanimously, and then it hit the Senate side towards the end of session and ran into some troubles. We've worked out that, and it's back to you. So to give you a quick refresher, TriMet is implementing a new fare system, and it's going to go online in 2017. eFare is a payment system that will better serve our riders by allowing them to pay with a transit debit card as they board a bus or train, instead of fumbling for cash or needing to purchase a pass at a grocery store or ticket vending machine. Customers can simply tap a validator and board the vehicle. The system has many benefits, including balance protection if someone loses their card, or the ability to reload value anytime, anywhere, and less waiting time because of the streamlined boarding process of just tapping on as you get onto the vehicle. All this results in more convenience and better service. In the process of developing this new eFare system, we discovered there were two problems that we identified in 1527, and that 1527 seeks to resolve. First, under current state law, after 3 years of inactivity, the unused balance in an eFare account would be considered unearned revenue and would be subject to Oregon's unclaimed property law. This unclaimed property would be sent to the state of Oregon's Department of State Land, which means TriMet would lose this revenue and riders with cards would no longer be valid. A second separate point is that under current law, TriMet's eFare card would be considered a gift card, and thus unused or abandoned accounts could not be archived. Given that we expect to have hundreds of thousands of these cards, being able to archive these unused cards would be very helpful. Senate Bill 1527 resolves these two problems by exempting public transportation cards from unclaimed property and gift card statutes. TriMet's eFare system is similar to systems in Seattle, Salt Lake City, San Francisco, and our proposal is based on legislation from those states. It's also important to note that transit agencies throughout the state, including Lane Transit District in Lane County, Salem Kaiser Transit, and Cascades East Transit, all of which I think you've received letters from, are interested in versions of eFare that meet their specific needs, knowing that making this transition would cause these transit agencies to lose critical fare revenue may discourage them from moving forward. Again, thank you for hearing this bill, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Chair Fagan, members of the committee, I'm Doug Barber, here today on behalf of the Lane Transit District in support of Senate Bill 1527. Lane Transit District is about a year, maybe 18 months behind TriMet in terms of implementing our version of the electronic fare system. But we see it as just modernizing the fare structure that we have. We realize that that's the direction that fares are going. And we want to be able to treat the money that our riders put into the eFare system the same way we treat cash that they buy a 10 fare book of tickets. It's just prepaid service. One of the benefits of the electronic fare system is if over time, as Aaron said, either they lose the card, it's easy to retrieve, or if they decide they're going to move out of state and want the money back, it's easy to return. All of that can be done under the eFare system much more simply than it can if we are considered a gift card. So I encourage your support of Senate Bill 1527. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Questions or comments for this panel? I was hoping there would be at least one so I'd know who to make carry the bill.
Why we're not asking questions.
Precious silence.
Yes, all right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I don't believe we had anybody else signed up. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on Drew Hagedorn? Any thoughts on this? On Senate Bill 1527.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Mr. Stark knows a lot about it. Representative Stark does.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Yes, Representative.
Madam Chair, there was a rumor that went through this building previously that this bill died on the other side because I carried it.
Okay.
So they may appreciate if I don't carry it this time.
Well, actually, I think you just made the case because it's already passed the other side. I'm just kidding, Representative. You already talked to me about it, so no problem. Okay, with that, any further discussion? All right, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing in House Bill 1527 and open a work session on, excuse me, I said House Bill, Senate Bill 1527, close that work house.
No such thing.
Close that public hearing in House Bill, Senate Bill 15. Man, we haven't had a lot of Senate bills, have we? I just cannot give myself to say the words Senate bills. Senate Bill 1527 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1527. All right, Representative.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move it.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
With respect to Senate Bill 1527 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Rayfield. Representative Rayfield has moved it, that we move it, Senate Bill 1527 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
No, thank you.
Okay, seeing none. Aaron, will you please call the roll?
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Hoyle?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Meerman?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Fagan?
Yes, and we will have Representative Rayfield carry that bill.
Really?
With that, the motion passes, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1527. All right, colleagues, that is all that we have. Let me quadruple check. That's all that we have on our agenda today. I have no informational hearings scheduled or for the duration of the session. So
looks like
this is farewell for now.
This is goodbye.
This is goodbye. So. Anything else for the good of the order?
Thank you.
With that, I will adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness.
Nice serving.
Effectiveness.
Nice serving.